Welcome to the seventh preseason Supercoach Coach podcast for season 2017. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined again this week by FD Donkey.
G'day, mate. Had a few sleepless nights lately. Just go to bed, think about my team, and still a few issues to solve.
Yeah, certainly forgotten what it's like to rue a Supercoach decision over the off-season, and you tend to forget just how much time you can spend overthinking these things. And the preseason is obviously the worst time for that, so definitely in agreement with you there. We've also got a guest joining us for this episode, and that's Dunny. Welcome back for your second show this preseason. Good to have you on, mate.
Thanks, Marcus. Good to be back. And yeah, my team has been players in and out everywhere, so I'm glad the JLT's finished so I can finally settle on an actual lineup.
Yeah, and you play a few different fantasy games, don't you, Dunny?
Yeah, I play the trifecta of them with the fantasy and real dream team as well. So those teams have been just as changed around as my Supercoach team has.
Yeah,
that's way too much to be thinking about.
I've cut down to one, so I couldn't imagine that. Do you draft, or do you keep it at that?
No, I do draft as well.
And you're right, and well, all right. Busy times for you, busy times. You must be looking forward to lockout then.
Yeah, I think so. Once lockout comes, it makes it a little bit easier. So
yeah,
all good though, lots of fun.
Yeah, brilliant. All right, well, we're glad to have you on for this last show. So as we flagged, we've done the positional shows. Hopefully that was good. So if you want to go back to listen to a particular position that you're struggling with selection-wise, go back episodes 3, 4, 5, and 6. We'll cover each of the four positions. They're probably the most relevant shows right now. And today we're going to cover rookies and do a little bit of a recap. So we've taken questions from social media as we do each week. They mostly roll up to be questions about the midfield and the rucks, which is fair enough. There's a lot of players to choose from in the midfield, and the rucks are a little bit shaky at the moment with some mid-price options coming into the frame late into the piece. So I'm keen to revisit that because I think when we recorded the show initially, Mark, we did lock that show away quite tightly, and the jack-in-the-box has sort of sprung out. All right, so before we get into the show, don't forget to sign up to join our Supercoach Coach group. You can do that just clicking on the link that's posted together with the podcast. So supercoachcoach.com.au for that. We will be giving shout outs throughout the year and give out a little bit of a prize to the group leader at the end of the season. So if you haven't already, you might as well jump in and get involved. We'll jump straight into the questions then. No more delay. We'll start off with the midfield questions this week. Question is from David Siddles. Should we consider David Swallow or just play an additional rookie? So I've professed that he's been locked in my team for quite a while now. I don't see him leaving at 280k, having played midfield, played 80 games in the AFL already, average 103 in that year he played in the midfield. I'm fairly sold. Mark, is he still locked and loaded for you?
Yeah, he was in my very first team that I picked, and he hasn't left. And I think if a player's been in your team that long, it's probably a mistake to be taking him out now.
Donnie?
He left my team briefly when I was trying to scrounge for some cash, but then I very quickly got him back in again. I guess the key with him over some of the other higher-priced rookies is we know he's going to play every game, and he's a little bit older and more mature body, so he should be, you know, should be all right out there.
And I know he also shares that round 9 bye, but I guess with him there's some more flexibility. If he's your only midfielder from the Suns, then that maybe isn't so bad. You can cover him with a rookie for 1 week, and then he's good during the byes for you. Or you might even be looking to upgrade him by then, depending on how he's going. So, yeah, it doesn't affect me as much with Swallow.
I'd say, being that he's a midfielder, unless he's going to average the 115 mark, which I don't see him doing, I'm looking to trade out Swallow. I'm just looking for him to increase in price quickly. The good part about him starting at a high price point as compared to rookies is he'll reach price maturity faster as well. So by round 9, they will have played 8 games. That works out to be 6 price movements. So you would assume that by then, hopefully, he's had enough of a price spike to trade around that. But it might even be an asset to have him a buy free through the buy. So we'll move on to the next question here from Richie Younger. Would you pick O'Meara before David Swallow or have both? I know that, Mark, you've been tossing up O'Meara a little bit and you weren't so keen on him earlier on in the preseason, but you're warming a little bit. Where do you sit on him at the moment?
This is probably the biggest issue that I'm having with my team. There's him and a couple of other players around that sort of price that I don't want too many mid prices in my team. I think that is going to limit your ability to get a team full of premiums in the end. And so I do think that you kind of have to pick between O'Meara and Swallow. There have been versions of my team that have both. Just watching O'Meara, like, he's had two full games now and scored 90 in each of them, and his contested ball is still amazing. I guess he's not going to be the O'Meara that you expect, though, yet. Like, you'd think that it's going to take him a year to find some confidence in his body and to really sort of get a feel for it. So, like, he would have to, I know that he's rated extremely highly, but he would have to just have an incredible season to average over 110. So I don't think he's going to be a keeper. And I guess with his injury profile, having already Swallow in there makes me just leaning still towards reluctant. But, I mean, I think he's in about 50% of teams at the moment, so there's a lot of coaches picking him. And if he does have a really good year, then I guess they're going to have an advantage as a result of that. What do you reckon, Donny?
Yeah, he's firmly sitting in my side right next to Swallow at the moment. And I agree, it is fairly risky, and I have tried to come up with other versions of my team that only have the one of them. But I kind of agree, you know, and put O'Meara in the same basket as what Marcus was saying before, that he is that little bit pricier and he should mature fairly quickly. I agree with you. I don't think he's a keeper. But to get that, I think he presents a fair bit of value that should be able to get a really quick price rise out of him. You know, once he's had, say, three or four or five price movements, if he looks like he's not going to go any further, you can then go down to one of those rookies who's come in at round three and is just about to have is on the bubble and make some pretty quick cash out of him potentially.
I'm a lot more sold on Swallow than I am on O'Meara. And I think Swallow's had two extra years in the system. He's played 35 more games. He's averaged 103. O'Meara's tops 98. And 30K makes a little bit of difference, even if it doesn't seem that way. I mean, that's still sort of an additional price movement O'Meara has to make up just to match Swallow's gains. And I'm tentative to have all three of Beams, O'Meara, and Swallow and run, five premium team as well. That seems like a lot of money to be spending in your midfield.
We've just got to be aware that this is against the general consensus. I think that more people would be saying O'Meara is a better pick than Swallow out there.
Yeah, and that's fair. I'm very concerned because I made a similar pick last year and it worked out awfully, Brad Crouch. And the only reason I'm even considering it is because I think O'Meara could be sort of a once-in-a-generation type player, right? Like, he could be a future Brownlow winner. And so off the back of that, you go, well, maybe I make an exception for him. So that's kind of where I'm sitting with O'Meara. Do I make an exception because I think he's just such an undeniable talent that I'm willing to cop his injury risk? The fact that Hawthorn, I'm not sure, they might even drop out of the eight. Like, there is that chance. His team might be under more pressure. A lot of things are sort of screaming no, but then you look at him as a player and you look at just the little burst he plays in the JLT and you get tempted back again. So unfortunately, I can't give a definitive answer like you, Mark. This is one part that I'm sort of struggling with.
Yep, back your own gut, I reckon.
Moving on to the rocks now. This first question is from Richie again. Is Gorn still a lock, or are we now sort of considering that Spencer might be named round one and the impact that it might have on him? And even if Spencer isn't named round one, the threat of Spencer coming through at some point in the season, playing as a second ruck and limiting his point scoring at some stage. Thoughts on Gorn? And then as a follow-up, is Stefan Martin a good alternative?
My thought probably have changed a little bit on Gorn, and I think it's as much to do with Spencer as it is to do with Nankervis and Witts coming around and Sanderlands as potential partners and saving a bit of money in that part of the field. So, yeah, look, there's a lot of doubt around Gorn. I think that, again, on this one, like, this maybe sounds like crap advice, but I think you've got to just back your gut on this, like, back your own judgment of it, because there's a lot of uncertainty to do with it, so you've got to make your own sense of that. Yeah, if it's me, he hasn't been in my team for a few weeks. but I've probably structured my team so that I could easily flip to him if I needed to. How about you guys?
Yeah, I don't have Gawn in my team at the moment purely for dollars reasons more than anything else. You know, he's just so damn expensive. He's hard to fit in. And I guess I did get a bit burnt by Steph Martin last year, so I'm a bit wary of going the guy who had the massive season last year. But I'm also not sold particularly on Steph this year either yet. His price is a lot more attractive, but if Archie Smith's named, he'll have more of an effect on Steph than what I think Spencer would on Gawn.
Yeah, if you look at Martin's figures from last year, it was like a 50-point drop in average when he had someone else rocking.
Even though I expect Gawn, Goldstein still to be the top two rocks throughout the course of the season, I can definitely see there being patches of the season where they become better buys. And so I'm hoping to get them at a discounted price and hopefully not be burnt too much in the meantime. Back your gut. I think you won't go wrong either way, unless the mid-pricer that you are picking in his place gets injured, which is not something that you can really call unless you're picking Sandilands, which is just a pill that you have to accept for some pretty large upside. But, I mean, you pick Gawn, at worst, he drops to 110 average. He's still a top two ruck, and there's nothing wrong with that pick. But as an option B, picking a mid-pricer could also work out similarly well. So
we should acknowledge that this is probably the biggest change in our teams, would you say, Marcus, since early in the preseason when we did this show?
Yeah.
And like it seems like that was 6 months ago, but it was probably only 3 weeks ago or something where we had Kepler on and we talked about the ruck. Gawn just seemed like an absolute lock at that point. And I guess the Spencer doubt and the other options that have come up has sort of potentially changed our thinking in that regard.
Yeah, for me, it's sort of, do I go with one premium ruck or none? Definitely not two or one at this stage. When Jack came on the show, we asked him, what's changed the most for yourself, for the Patreon-exclusive show? And he said, it's the emergence of Sandilands, the fact that he's demanding to be picked. And I think he's in 40% of teams right now. The week after that, Nankervis sort of firmed even more at 366K, but looking good as the number one ruck at Richmond. And then you've got Witts, who might be the number one ruck at Gold Coast as well. I read something else that was sort of pointing out that there's a lot of injuries in terms of number one rucks. So a lot of sides are sort of fielding weaker ruckmen. And so that might be a reason to go for a Gawn or Goldstein type. But for me, that sort of points to opportunity for lower ranked ruckmen as well, that they're not sort of facing number one ruckmen all the time, that sometimes you'll have Witts facing off against Nankervis. And in those games, like somebody, one of the two of them is going to score 130. So I think I've flipped a little bit in terms of my evaluation of some of these mid-price ruckmen.
Yeah, and I think that's affected me too.
All right, last ruck question here, and we've sort of alluded to him a little bit already, but Gary Reel's asking about how seriously we're considering Jared Witts at the moment. So we've talked a little bit about Sandilands and Nankervis. We're at the moment fairly seriously considering both of those players, but Witts is another one that's certainly come right into the equation at 218,000 that we perhaps wrote off a little bit hastily at the start. Mark, are you looking more closely at Sandilands and Nankervis types, or has Witts sort of sneaked into your side as well?
I'd say there's a better than 50% chance that all of Sandilands, Nankervis and Witts will make my team at the moment. Played around with a few different structures, but I think Witts does compare pretty favorably to the other rookies at about 200,000 with his scoring potential. My concern is, I think if he's picked ahead of Curry round one, then that's who they're going to go with. So I would hope that he would get me sort of through to his round nine buy. Look, there's a real good chance that Witts will be in my team. And Nankervis has been in my team for a fair while, but he's sort of in that O'Meara category of he might not make the final copy, just depending on where I need money. But yeah, I think Witts is in a really good position. He's been recruited to be a ruckman. 209 centimetres will benefit from no third man up. He could average in the 85-90 category potentially. Like, that's probably his upside. But like, if he averages 80-85, he's still going to make a decent amount of money out of him.
So, Mark, are you running Nankervis in your forward line, or is he your R2?
No, so I'd be having
Sandy Witts.
Sandy Witts and Nankervis forward.
I think, for me, if you're considering not starting a Goldstein and Gawn type, so if you're looking at just going two mid prices, it's really difficult to select Sandilands, Nankervis and Cameron, and then assume that you'll have the flexibility to trade in a ruckman in case Sanderlin's goes down, even though you can quite easily trade Cameron out and have the ability to pivot Nankervis back to the forward line when you don't need that cover. But if you're going with two mid prices in the rucks, I think the risk profile all of a sudden becomes so overwhelming that you almost want Nankervis to be permanently stationed in your forward line from the start of the season to be ready to cover Sanderlin's or Witt's in case of a one-week injury or rest or any sort of short-term issues. I just sort of feel once you go down to two mid prices, it's quite easy to go up to a third. And the other reason why I've started looking at Witt's a little bit more seriously is we've complained a lot about rookie quality this season. We're looking for rookies everywhere, and here's one that's sort of staring us in the face. We're considering paying 250K for some rookies that we're not sure can average 70, and Witts is a guy that, as long as he plays, should at the very basement be averaging 70, but have the potential to be averaging, like Mark said, maybe that 85-90 mark, and so that's why I'm looking a lot more closely at Witts as well.
If you're going to have Nankervis and Sanderlin's in the ruck, then I think you're almost forced to take Ryder in the forward line for the reasons that you've said, as that the backup option of a way out in case one of them goes down. And in regards to Witt, like, I agree with what, a lot of what you said. I just think that we should be making clear that it's a pretty risky
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think in that situation, you also need the Nankervis backup or someone in the forward line to back up.
Yeah,
you definitely need someone to back him up. I think for me, I'm nowhere near gutsy enough to take Sanderlin's and Witt as R1, R2. That would just make me way too nervous each week. I don't mind the idea of Witts, but if you're going to take him, I'd prefer to pair him with someone like a Grundy, Goldstein, or Gawn, just to have at least some certainty there in my ruck line.
And look, the risk that you have to swallow, and it's a fairly significant one, and the reason why we're talking about all this and why Dunny's saying he's not willing to potentially do that is, hey, if one of these blokes goes down and you've taken all three of the decent mid-price ruck options, you don't have anybody to side swap to.
Yeah.
So that means that you're trading down, if you're not faced with an injury that week, you're trading down a Joel Selwood or a Taylor Adams. You're trading someone just so that you're not dealing with donuts in the ruck. That's just not something that's sustainable. You can't hope for a rookie to come along. There's no rookie cover realistically. So that's why the risk is so high. If it fails, you're trading out a premium. So you're essentially double swapping in order to fix an issue.
We all know what happens once you start trading around in the rucks.
Yeah. But
you never stop.
Having said that, though, being able to start a 300K and 200K ruck combo as compared to a 645 and 588 combo, it just presents so much goddamn value. And I guess that's the only reason why I'm considering it so late in the piece. On the one hand, we have two really clearly standout ruck options, but they are so expensive, not just marginally more expensive, they're like midfield level expensive. And on the other hand, we're really, really cheap ruck options that are going to play number one ruck. And not just, these guys are about 400K, it's 300K and 200K. To spend 500K in your rucks on two number one ruckmen, if they don't get injured, would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
All the smart people will probably side with Dunny on this one.
Yep. Our listeners are going to listen to this and think we're raving mad, Mark. So I'm glad we have...
I'm looking forward to seeing who you two guys end up with in R1, R2 to see if you actually go through with it.
Yeah.
8 trades later.
To the rookies now, we will start off in the back line and we'll cover off the 200K players first. So I don't think we talked about Thurlow in the back line show, did we, Mark?
No, we didn't,
mate. No. All right. So we've got Thurlow to talk about, 268K, and Marchbank at 236K. For me, Thurlow is an absolute lock if you're playing four rookies down back. He is, I think, quite capable of stepping up into the Corey Enright role. That was the role sort of earmarked for Thurlow when he was drafted. That's what he's been groomed to do. That's what he's been able to replicate. He's got good skills, can rebound arguably a bit better than Enright. Probably not as good as intercept marking, but I think he could be quite good for an 85 average. If he has a couple of games hitting the ton, then that'll be enough to hopefully get him to premium price. So I'm pretty tempted by him. Marchbank's definitely one that stormed into considerations as well, though.
I think you've talked up Thurlow quite a bit there, mate. That has me pretty worried that he's going to be a stinker.
You're a long supporter, are you, Mark?
Because you do realize it was only a couple of weeks ago that we said Zach Tui's going to be the new Enright. So
yeah, I was a lot more tentative on him than the two of you who are on the show though. Thurlow, I'm very gung ho about. So I've got Thurlow. I don't have Tui.
Look, Thurlow is in and out of my team a little bit. Like, you look at the last season that he played. I think early on in the season he had 4 scores of 100 in a row. So he's shown that he can do it in the past. He does have a good kick on him. His preseason scores were all around that 80, 85 mark. So that's kind of promising going forward because his game time wasn't huge in the JLT games. So, look, I think he's definitely around the mark for my team, in and out a little bit. Like, I guess the problem for me is that I don't want to end up taking too many mid prices that are not going to end up to becoming premiums. And I just think that Thurlow, at absolute best, is going to be a really low-end premium. That sort of takes away from the guns and rookies approach to my team, and that's a little bit too much of a compromise sometimes.
If you compare him to a lot of the expensive rookies, he seems like a no-brainer. Like, Marchbank cost 30K less. And
I think it could be a trap. Like, O'Meara's only $100,000 more. Swallow's only $80,000 more. Thurlow's only $80,000 more. Like, if you start thinking like that, you're just going to end up with a lot of players that are in that 200 to 300
bucket. You do want to be tentative about that, and you don't want to overstack your team. And that's why I say if you have 4 defender rookies in your back line, including Thurlow, then he looks like a shoo-in. But if you're only running 3... if you have Hampton, Stewart, Otten, maybe that's good enough and you don't need a Thurlow type. So I definitely agree with you. He becomes more attractive the deeper you go. But we did get one question from a listener asking, how deep can you go in terms of backline rookies? Is 4 too many? I don't think 4's too many, but if I went to 4, Thurlow would definitely be my 4th. Because at some point with maximizing rookies on field, you also need to balance sort of scoring as well. You don't want to run sort of 4 average scoring rookies and really hurt your scoring. And so I think Thurlow helps mitigate that by bringing a higher scoring angle that maybe some of the other 200K players don't.
So, Dunny, what do you reckon, Thurlow versus Marchbank? And could you start both of them?
Well, I was just going to ask you the same question. I mean, I don't think you can start both of them purely from a dollars perspective. Currently, I'm running a 4-deep rookie structure in my back line. But I do have Marchbank as that D3 rather than Thurlow. No particular reason on that. I think, you know, you're right in a way there, Marcus. I think Thurlow certainly has some runs on the board. He looked really good, but then so did Marchbank. The only reason we haven't seen much more of Marchbank in the past was really because he was in that GWS lineup where it was just so stacked he struggled to get in. I think in a Carlton lineup that doesn't certainly have the number of, shall we say, talented young players that GWS have, I think he can certainly do really well. I mean, his JLT scores of 76, 86, and 85. Yeah, it's certainly nothing to sneeze at there.
It's interesting that they both look like decent picks potentially, but you can't play both.
Yeah, I don't think you can do both.
We'll move on to the rest of the backline options and quite a few options to pick from. So we've got Keefe at 166K, Scharenberg 164, Hampton 160, Vickers Willis 124, Otten 124, Stewart 117, and Smith 117. Was there any sort of options that I missed out there? Otherwise, who do you like?
I think Zach Guthrie's in like 15% of teams or something. If he gets upgraded, he did look really good in his 2 preseason games, but coughed a bit of an injury, I think, in the second one. Scharenberg just hasn't had the minutes. I'd be surprised if he's named round 1. Keith, again, only played that first JLT game. The one that has really stood out for me is Hampton. I think he's looked absolutely brilliant in the preseason. He just has a real presence about him. Could do really well this year, so I'm very keen to have him in. I think he's an absolute lock. And then I have Vickers Willis, Otten, and Stewart, who I think all should be named, and I think they all have decent scoring potential, but you're hoping that they are all named, and I know that Otten has pretty average job security, just given their talent around him, but has performed awesome during the preseason.
From what I'm reading in the press over here, I think Otten is pretty much a lock for a spot in that side, at least to start with. I think he'll be given a chance. Then he's just obviously got to keep it. Tom Stewart, I don't mind the look of there. He had some pretty good games. The third JLT was a bit down, but that's okay. What are your thoughts on Joel Smith? You know, he didn't play that third JLT. Is that an ominous sign for you guys, or are you comfortable with that?
Yeah, I always see that as a pretty bad sign unless there was a reason why they didn't. most teams going pretty strong in that last game.
Another guy, and I'm not sure of his ownership, but I know he was in a lot of teams, and I don't think we saw him at all in the JLT, was Luke Ryan from Fremantle. I think it's Luke.
Yeah.
He was locked in a lot of teams. Yeah. Hopefully he's not in a lot of teams still, because I don't think he played at all in the JLT. Definitely didn't play. I haven't seen him on any injury lists anywhere, so I'm not sure what's going on with him.
At least we need a downgrade target.
That's right. Yeah. And certainly I'd be keeping tabs on him. If he does come in after round two or three, he'll certainly be a lock for a downgrade target, I reckon.
For me, I've got Hampton, Otten and Stewart locked in. As long they're named to start round one, I'm happy to start them. And they're all older players as well. And then Vickers Willis is sort of my backup option of those. We'll move to the defensive midfield options now. We've got McGrath at 212K and Hibbard at 124K. Thoughts on either the DM options and also the chance of starting them in the midfield, considering when we move to the midfielders, that's arguably the driest position on ground for rookies.
Look, I think that if Hibbard's named, he'll definitely be in my team. I think he'll get games at some point. It's just a matter of whether it's round one or a little bit later.
Would you start him if he doesn't start in round one with that flexibility? Like, could he be a floating donor?
Look, he's not really going to be a floating donor for me, because I'd have to basically bring in another guy that's going to be a floating donor as well. Like, I think it's Berry from Brisbane that is likely to get games early once he's recovering from injury. I'd be happy to bring him in as well to play that role with Hibbard, but I don't think I'd have two floating donuts to start. There's some chance that if Hibbard's not named, I will still start him in my team. There's been plenty of examples in the past where you start a player that doesn't play round one or round two and he ends up being a decent pick, especially in that back line in the last defensive position. So, yeah, some chance I pick him without being named even Hibbard.
Yeah, I don't think I'll be starting with McGrath. I'm just too worried about him. He's too expensive for what he produced in the JLT. I'm a bit in the same boat with Mark on Hibbard. If he's named, I'll certainly look at starting him, depending on who else doesn't get named. But at the moment, he's not in my side.
We'll move on to the midfield options now. I want to start off with the couple of probably locks at this stage of the season. Powell Pepper and Barrett. At 135K and 128K respectively. Look like they'll play games. Look like, to be honest, that's probably enough to get you a look in the midfield as a rookie this season, but also look like they have decent enough scoring potential. They seem to be sort of locked away as two of the three midfield rookies, and the question is who's your third, really? Any sort of disagreements with that?
Barrett's still rookie listed, though, isn't he? You're expecting him to get upgraded, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, he's rookie listed, but I can't see why he wouldn't get upgraded. He played all three JLT games. I just wish there was a score for don't argues, because Powell Pepper, he'll just rack those up.
He definitely loses scores for free kicks. I think he had 8 on the weekend.
Yeah, he did.
That is a lot.
That's what happens if you go with a don't argue all the time. Dusty had to learn that too.
In looking for a third midfield rookie, GE, right, it is pretty thin out there at the minute. I think at the moment I've got Miles from Hawthorn sitting in that position, but that's very, very subject to change at the moment.
All right,
yeah,
I think
a pretty similar setup, mate.
Why don't we go to the mid-forward options then? We've got Ainsworth at 199K, Bowers at 171, Taranto 207, Pickett 124, and Miles 124. And as you both have sort of flagged already, that's looking like the most likely way of dealing with this tough third rookie selection is to open up your mid-forward link. And a good reason for doing that is you could select two mid-forwards. I mean, unlike the DM situation where you have Hibbard but nobody else to really pivot with, you've got a couple of rookies that give you an added level of flexibility.
Yeah, I haven't really been a fan of the scoring of Ainsworth and Bowers so far in the preseason. They looks very sketchy.
Taranto, Pickett and Miles definitely seem to be the front runners of the mid-forward options. Taranto is one that probably looks like he's worth his price tag. Average pretty much 90, 95-ish for the preseason games. His body looks like he's ready for AFL footy. I'm pretty sure I'm going to start him in my side. He hasn't left in quite a while.
What do you guys think about his job security, though? That's my only concern with him in that stacked Giants team.
Yeah, look, that's a concern for any rookie, really, and it is a concern for any Giants rookie, and really he's just crossing your fingers and hoping for the best. He looks like he's going to be given a shot, and there's a couple of injuries around. So, yeah, you think he'd get a chance, but, I mean, there's certainly... He could get dropped after 2 weeks for sure.
I won't start him if he doesn't start in round one, but I think there's a good chance he starts in round one. The question is, does he get dropped early in the season? I think you don't want to take a punt on a 200K price rookie if they're not named to start. But if they're named to start, yes, they might get dropped. But we did see quite a few rookies last year even come back from getting dropped and then still rise up in price, and blokes with a lot less scoring potential than Taranto. So I'm quite happy picking him, even if he does get dropped after a couple of rounds, because a floating donut can be useful as well early on in the season. So that doesn't bother me as long as he's listed in round one. If he's not, though, Dunia, I won't be sort of going out on a limb and hoping he comes in round two.
Oh, me neither, mate. He's in my side at the moment, but yeah, if he's not on that team sheet this time next, or you know, Thursday next week or whatever day the team comes out, he's gone.
So do you have Miles over Pickett?
I do, yeah. I've got Miles just ahead of Pickett at the moment.
I've got actually Miles, Pickett and Parfitt all in my team with two of them on the midfield bench. So hoping for selection there.
Yeah, Parfitt as well.
But they all sort of look like they could... They're not going to have huge scoring potentials, but I'm really struggling for midfield rookies. So
yeah,
those at the moment, guys, best of the bad run.
Sorry, mate. Yeah, at the moment, I've got Miles, Taranto, and Pickett all in my side.
We got a question here about Brody at 176K in the midfield before we move on to the forward options. Any thoughts on him at all?
Rocket has always said that he's like only in the mix. He's looked pretty decent when he's been out there in the preseason, but I guess he's competing with some other guns for an inside midfield spot. So I'm not sure that Rocket thinks that there's one there for him at the moment.
All right, to the Rucks, we've got Proust and Cameron to talk about. Proust at 124K definitely looks like the better option of the two. Has been very impressive so far. And the fact that people are talking about him getting a spot when they're already tied up for Ruck spots with Goldstein, obviously the number one, and they also have Ben Brown and... Magic Door both sort of knocking on the door for that R2 spot, whether Proust can get a gig, but that's how well he's performed in the JLT. But Cameron, on the other hand, 117K, chance for games as a third sort of ruck forward string at Sydney, but they're facing a bit of injuries. But he's got that ruck forward flexibility, a link that we really, really missed last year, Mark, the lack of a Mason Cox type. So I know earlier on in the preseason you said for that exact reason you could only really pick Cameron and you'd have to pass on Proust. Is that still where you're sitting on that?
100%, especially with players like Mankiewicz and Ryder and other ruck forwards that are available. I think you absolutely have to pick a ruck forward, and it should either be Cameron because he may eventually get a game at some point, which could prove quite handy, or that Strandica, however you say it, from Fremantle, because he's a good loopholing option and Freo play late.
Yeah, I like the guy from Freo. I'm not even going to try and pronounce his name for those very reasons. The fact that he's a ruck forward, but also I like to have that loophole option sitting there on the ruck bench, because generally, you know, with your two rucks, you don't have to use your emergency player in your ruck very often at all, whereas you might actually need them in the other one. So I prefer, where I can, to do my captain loopholing in the ruck line.
That's a good call, Johnny. All right, we'll move on to the forwards now. Last rookie section. We'll start off with the expensive blokes again. We've got Will Hoskin-Elliott at 213,000 and McCarthy at 204. We've talked about 200K plus rookies so far, and Will Hoskin-Elliott and Cam McCarthy haven't sort of been brought up in those discussions as, hey, these are blokes potentially worth picking despite their more expensive price tag. So I gather from that they're not exactly high on your lists at the moment. They both have very good pedigree in terms of the fact that McCarthy is very highly sought after at Freo, and Will Hoskin-Elliott, a former number four draft pick. But in terms of that converting into Supercoach points, that seems to be sort of the major point of concern for both these blokes. Thoughts on their scoring potential, Mark?
McCarthy seems like an absolute lock in Fremantle's team, but he seems like he's going to have a few really, really down games as well. And you'd sort of want him to just get a couple of big games to get his price up. And I think it's just too much of a risk at 200,000 to be asking for that. I like Will Hoskin-Elliott a little bit better because he's just going to be a bit more consistent. And if you're paying 200,000, you probably need them to be on your field. And so consistency can be quite beneficial. I don't mind Hoskin-Elliott. He was in my team for quite a while. He hasn't been in there for a couple of weeks just because I guess that there's other options around that I'm interested in. So, yeah, I don't hate the Hoskin-Elliott pick, though. He should average 75. It's probably an upside, but yeah, about 75.
Yeah, at the moment I do have Cam McCarthy in my side. Maybe it's because I was blinded by that last JLT game. But, you know, if you look at that last JLT game where he did kick six goals, he still only got to 86 points with those goals in it. So, you know, his scoring...
That's awful.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Hoskin-Elliott with 83, 64 and 80 does certainly look like the better pick of the two. I just want to see where he fits into that Collingwood lineup first, because as you say, Mark, Cam McCarthy is 100% locked in Fremantle's best 22. Can we say the same for Hoskin-Elliott at this point in Collingwood's?
I'd say yes, at least for the first eight rounds.
Yeah, okay. And that's fair. And, you know, look, at 213K, if you can have him for eight rounds and make some quick cash out of him and trade up to one of the better forwards, then he's done his job.
My concern about Will Hoskin-Elliott is he doesn't play a role that is sort of independent of how his team sort of scores. He does rely on outside ball, and so if Collingwood win more games than they lose, he's a lot more high scoring and a lot better Supercoach selection than if they lose more games than they win. So I don't think he's a Trelaw or Pendlebury type or Adams, you know, these inside mids that we're thinking about from Collingwood, especially with such a concentration of them getting the pill in losing games. You know, a lot of these outside blokes will barely sort of get a sniff in losing games if Collingwood don't end up in the top eight. So if you rate Collingwood as a top eight contender, then I'd say Hoskin-Elliott looks more attractive. So that's how I'd base that selection. We'll move on to the other cheaper forward priced rookies. We've got Turner at 171K, J. Kennedy Harris 151, Aaron Black 137, Dan Butler 124, and Brett Eddy 102K. Brett's the one that's probably the most locked at the moment. Upgraded already, going to play games. And basement priced is something we appreciate. That's an extra 22K that we can put into an upgrade somewhere. So he's one that's fairly locked. And Turner's the other one that's been sort of tossed around a fair bit as well.
Turner, I saw him kick the first goal on the weekend and it just seemed like such a cheapie where someone like hardly tapped him on the shoulder and I thought, don't get sucked into this guy. And then he kicked three and scored about 100-odd. And the thing is that he's done that in the past. Like, when he hasn't been the sub in the past, his scores have actually been pretty decent. So, look, I think that for 170K is definitely someone that I'm considering. Isn't in my team at the moment, but he's not far from my team, I guess. The other guys, Eddie, like I said, absolutely locked. And he's probably the only one out of those guys. I know that Richmond have said that Butler will play. Marcus, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on Black and Dunny, particularly to hear your thoughts on Houston. I know that Pittard's down and Houston's been upgraded and Broadbent's a bit iffy, so you'd kind of expect Houston to play, but whether he has any chance of keeping his spot sort of beyond a couple of weeks, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I think just the first one, Brett Eddy, absolute lock. The fact that he kicked all those goals down at Lunga, that was his home ground in the SANFL, so he should have known how to play in that wind. But yeah, Dan Houston, I really like him. I am very concerned about job security with him. Yes, he has been upgraded, and obviously that means Kenny's got him in his plans. I actually think Riley Bonner's probably more likely to get games ahead of Houston. Bonner did play down back in those the JLT games that he did play. If Houston's named, look, you might want to take a flyer on him, but I can't see him playing, you know, five, six, seven games in a row at the start of the season that we need these guys to be able to do.
I'll just give my thoughts quickly on Aaron Black. I actually think that of all the rookies that Geelong have up as potential Supercoach selections, so Parfitt, Stewart, Guthrie and himself, going into the preseason, I actually like Black the most. So I'm surprised that he's sort of dropped down to fourth in the list more publicly. For me, it's confusing that even though we've dropped Enright and Bartel, we're gaining Thurlow and Tui. So the fact that we had Ruggles and Buse fight over the small defender position concerns me a little bit about Stewart. But Stewart looks like a fair certainty to come in. But what I'm sort of in a roundabout way trying to say is structurally, I think the gap that we have that's the most glaring at the moment is actually the tall forward gap. We lost Vardy, we lost Kirsten. We've lost some tall options, something that we previously had plenty of depth in. I think we're now kind of thin on. The fact that Taylor's moved into the forward line sort of indicates that. I wonder how long this experiment's going to last. They sound pretty certain that they're going to try and persist with it in the season proper. But for me, as soon as Taylor drops back into the back line, Aaron Black's the one that sort of steps up into the fold. So I see him getting games at some stage in the season, if not in round one. But he didn't play the last JLT, which sort of threw things up a bit, despite sort of, I think he kicked four goals in the first game. So I don't know. I've got my Geelong supporter cap on, but I can't quite make sense of what's going on.
Maybe a good downgrade option.
Yeah, he is a little bit more pricey, 137K, so it would be a little bit frustrating to have him sitting there for too long. When he does get in, he will be up and down because he is a key position forward, but assuming Geelong stay in the top eight, which there are concerns about that, but they're still potentially also a top four contender, you know, if they do well, you'll have big enough games to, you think, spike in price. I mean, if he has a bag of four or five for a couple games in a row, that'll be enough to take his price point to a 350K type range. So if he's getting games, I'd say pick him, but he might not start the season. So I wouldn't start him unless he's starting round one. Shall we sum up the rookies? So sort of structurally, if you're going through the positions, where are you sort of sitting at the moment? Mark, we'll start off with you. And if you're flipping between sort of a couple of structures, just elaborate.
Yeah, it depends what day of the week it is, mate. It depends what the rookie news is like. I mean, I have a natural, and I think a lot of super coaches have this, the natural temptation is to say, the rookies are crap, they're not coming, I'm going to fit nine mid-prices into my team. Because your team kind of, like, your starting team kind of looks better that way. Like, it looks like you have a good scoring player in every position, and it looks like it's going to score more round one. But there are good reasons why people go the guns and rookies strategy, and that there's really good reasons why that has been the strategy that works over time and is likely to just continue to work, even though you might feel that the strength of the rookies isn't there. So, and that's kind of been the main thing affecting my team balance. So at the moment, I've got five defensive rookies, including two on the bench, and I'm sort of, I'll either have five or six back there. In the midfield, until very recently, I've actually haven't had any rookies on the field. I think that, be interested to hear what Dunny thinks, but I think that Sam Powell-Pepper should be on the field. I think his scoring potential is good enough, so I'm trying to find a way for that to happen. And looking at potentially Witts in the ruck, and either one or two rookies on field down forward, but I'm not confident in any of them on the field. So I'm looking at maybe Taranto, Turner, Will Oscar Elliott, the more expensive types to be playing on field rather than these cheapies who are like Jared Pickett, who had one good game, but he's quite likely to put out 30s. I don't really want him sitting on my field.
Yeah, looking at my side, mate, so at the moment I'm running with six rookie defenders, if you count Marchbank at 230K as a rookie. I think, yeah, as we sort of talked about tonight in this podcast, there's really, yeah, there's not much elsewhere, and that there seems to be a few rookie options down back, so I'm running with that. I'm the same as you in the midfield at the moment. I don't have any rookies on field. Swallow is currently my last midfield player. Powell-Pepper, you're right, could go on field. If you can get him on there, great. But if not, I think, you know, it's safe enough to have those three guys on the bench. I'm not too desperately trying to get him on ground. Never know what's going to happen there. Ruck line, I've only got the one on the bench. And up forward at the moment, I've got Taranto on field with Cam McCarthy and then the two guys on the bench. But, you know, Cam McCarthy's certainly not locked in there at the moment. I want to see what other rookies get a game or get named on you know, Wednesday, Thursday night next week, and that's when I'll make my decision.
I'm not starting any rookies in the midfield. I've not started any all preseason, and I'm not going to change it for Powell-Pepper, even though he has good scoring potential. I think I'd take a hit in 10% less scoring with a rookie defender instead of Powell-Pepper in the midfield, just because there's so many premium midfielders I want. There's three good mid-price options in Beams, Omira and Swallow, and there's only a couple of good midfield options. So I don't want to have to pick more rookies in my midfield just so I can get a 10% increase in scoring potentially. So I'm not playing any rookies in the midfield. In the back line, I'm playing three or four. When I am playing four, I'm mitigating the risk by running both Thurlow and Marchbank. In the forward line, I'm struggling to pick premiums this year as I've sort of expressed frustration about most of the preseason. So I'm actually deciding between three or four rookies on field in the forward line and sort of just playing all the expensive ones like Will Hoskin, Elliott and McCarthy. Probably a little bit more different to some of the other teams floating around there at the moment. Donny, anything to leave our listeners with?
Just a couple of thoughts on rookies. Don't get sucked in by the rookies who had one massive game in the preseason in a really good team that hasn't had a lot of their stars playing. I guess something I look for is someone who has scored consistently well, played all three preseason games with lots of mixes of players around them, and someone who's likely to have a bit of job security about them. So, you know, you don't get stuck with a guy who has a great one game or two games and then drops out of the team because one of the stars has come back into the side or something like that. So just be careful of that. And the other one is, particularly with the Thursday night game, don't pick a guy, a rookie, just because he's named in that game. I think we all remember a certain guy called Relton Roberts who we all picked just because he was named.
Turned out to be no good.
So, yeah, don't panic at that first game and think, oh, there's a rookie playing, I better pick him because I don't know if any of the others will. Yeah, I wouldn't panic like that.
I love that the name has gone down in infamy. I think we reference it every year, the Relton Roberts scenario. But, no, I like that one, Tommy. So I think that wraps up a fairly hefty preseason. Don't forget, go back and listen to the positional shows if you're missing anything. But otherwise, hopefully this was a nice little recap for you. Covered the rookies, covered some structures. So you should have all the tools you need to launch into a successful season 2017. Don't forget, join our Supercoach Coach group. And if you're looking for additional content, patreon.com/supercoachcoach to support us. We're giving out additional content. We'll be running some giveaways later on in the season. And Mark and I are going to try and do a little bit something extra before the season kicks off. With that, I just want to say thank you, Dunny, for joining us again. We'll try and get you on again throughout the season, mate.
Thanks, guys. Good luck to everyone out there. I hope your teams are all nicely locked away and as good as you can get them before round one. And unless you're playing against me, then I hope your team's not that good.
All right, fellas. It's been a great preseason. We'll catch you after the kickoff. See ya.
See ya.